Welcome, everybody, to the Old Time Boxing Show on the Grilling Truth Sports Network. Of course, brought to you by mybookie.ag. You can go to www.thegruelingtruth.net. Click on the banner. It'll take you right to mybookie.ag if you want to bet on the fights this weekend. I'm your host for the Old Time Boxing Show, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I want to welcome in my co-host, Christopher Shelton. How you doing, Chris?
Good, Mike. Glad to do this. Riddick Bowe. Good topic.
Yeah, as Chris just ruined it for everybody. Oh. The show's about Riddick Bowe. I'm kidding, Chris. Anybody that clicks it sees it. It's about Riddick Bowe. But let's see. But Riddick Bowe, I think, was one of the most talented men to ever hold the heavyweight title. Also, one of the toughest guys to ever hold the title. He had a career that spanned five or six really legendary fights with two men, which would be Andrew Gullotta, Evander Holyfield. Was a great amateur fighter. And when I say Riddick Bowe, Chris, what comes to your mind?
What comes to my mind is, first of all, only one loss, which is one of his strengths. The disappointment that he never fought Lennox Lewis as a professional. I know he wanted to fight Mike Tyson as a professional. I guess it's the three Holyfield bouts and then the brutality of the Gullotta bouts afterwards. But the Holyfield fights are really his claim to fame. And then it gets, like I said, a tiny bit of disappointment because it's an amazing rise to fight Holyfield. And just wish, I know he wanted to fight Tyson and it didn't work out. And it didn't seem like he wanted to fight Lennox Lewis and Lennox Lewis wanted to fight him. And I guess that's what I would look at as his legacy in my mind.
Yeah, and you talked about that. Bowe had a prestigious career in the New York State Golden Gloves. I think he won three or four Golden Gloves titles. Actually, in 1984, at age 17, he knocked out opponent James Smith in just 4 seconds. He did lose in 1985 to Fort Wayne heavyweight Donald Stevens. Of course, probably one of the most famous things is he won the silver medal in the 1988 Seoul Olympics. Lost a controversial final to future world heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis. And when I rewatched that fight, because the narrative by the media is that Lewis completely dominated the fight, but Bowe had a dominant first round. I think he landed 33 of 44 punches, while Lewis landed just 14 of 67. And the thing that struck me in the first round was the referee from East Germany gave Bowe two cautions for headbutts, deducted a point for a third headbutt, although the replay clearly showed there was no headbutt. And commentator, and Ferdy Pacheco, a guy I never agree with, I actually agreed with here because he said they didn't butt heads.
No, I have the same impression as you that before I watched it, because we do this and we try to look like we know what we're talking about, so we watch them all again. My impression was that Lewis dominated Bowe and scored a knockout in the second round, and that's just not true. My impression or my memory is fading or something. The first round, Bowe did dominate the first round, clearly, and then the headbutt thing is very unusual because as it was being explained, a headbutt doesn't mean the heads actually connect. It means one head goes below the other head, so they don't even touch each other, and it's called a headbutt, which is very bizarre. And Bowe certainly did not look in trouble when he was called, when it was a knockout. So I don't know why Bowe didn't fight Lewis as a professional, because always my impression was, oh, he got beat up so easily by Lewis as an amateur that he was kind of frightened to fight him as a professional. But I don't know that he did a great job against Lewis as an amateur, and so my impression or my memory is wrong. It was a very bizarre. When you're dealing with the Olympics, you're dealing with bizarre stuff.
Yeah, and you had Lewis did land several hard punches in the second round, but the referee gave Bowe two standing eight counts and waved the fight off after the second one, even though it seemed like Bowe wasn't really in trouble.
No, I agree. I mean, certainly when I was watching these professional bouts and seeing fights where I'm like screaming at the video, hey, stop this fight. Bowe was not really in any trouble. It was just, but fortunately, I guess, because Lewis, turned out to be such a great champion and that Lewis wasn't fighting badly, but it does look like Bowe dominated the first round, and the second round, which didn't conclude, they scored at a knockout, and these headbutts, again, where the heads don't even collide, that's got to be the Olympics, because that's so weird.
Yeah, and then, of course, he turned professional, and I think this is where the world was first introduced to Rock Newman, which, I mean, it's probably not a good thing. But the one good thing Rock Newman did do was he went out and he got highly regarded trainer Eddie Futch, who took on the job of developing Bowe because he said he saw enormous potential in Bowe.
Yeah, I gotta say, Rock Newman's a mixed package. I did not like him. He became so high profile when Bo was champion, almost so much you thought he was champion. He was so much on 60 Minutes and all over the
Yeah,
news
and
and
I think he went out of his
outspoken.
way to insert himself that way also.
He did. He was outspoken in a way that wasn't necessarily. I don't think it did Bo a lot of service because Bo was a quieter guy who sometimes had his moods. But anyway, I will give Newman credit, having watching all these fights again, that he was ultimately part of with Fudge too. They had a terrific job of setting up opponents for Bo. I mean, they really brought him along in a way that you just don't necessarily see with other fighters, so that he kept growing from one caliber of fighters to another one. Before he ever took on an undefeated Evander Holyfield, he was fighting a good, nice run of people in the right order because he really needed a learning process.
Yeah, I mean, even in his first fight against Lionel Butler was a solid heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't necessarily take on shuns, but he definitely moved along the process. And I guess we'll talk about some of these guys because it's a little bit sad for me to actually watch some of these fights, just because at one point you're an up and comer, and then at another point you're on the way down, but you're a really good fighter, and then you get to face someone like Riddick Bowe, because you're going to be good enough to take to not you're not going to win. But you're going to give the guy something to learn from. But unfortunately, it means you're going to take a beating and a pummeling in the process, which is what I saw with some of these talented guys Bo faced before he went for the championship.
Yeah, and I think if you look at his career, I mean, I think the first time that he really stood out to me is they did have him on some smaller cards, but the first fights where he really came into, some kind of fame or interest, notoriety, would have probably been the wins over former champion Pinklin Thomas and, of course, Burt Smokin' Cooper, who gave everybody trouble. And I think he
I know you love Burt Cooper. We all love our own, and I like Burt Cooper too. He goes in there really high energy, kind of positive. As you said, you like to compare him to Joe Frazier a little bit, but he does. He comes in there very high energy and ready to jump in there and throw punches.
Yeah, and the thing is this, Burt Cooper gave everybody trouble, including Michael Moore. But I mean, I think this was on the undercard of Douglas and Tyson, where he basically destroyed Cooper in like 2 rounds. And that's when it really got my attention, because a month before he had beaten Pinklin Thomas, but Pinklin Thomas was 5 or 6 years past his prime. He had the drug problem. And
Yeah.
the fight
Well,
against Burt Cooper was impressive.
and Cooper did have a pretty good first round, or at least he was doing well halfway into the first round. So it was exciting for a little while before Bo took him out in the second round. And the Pinklin Thomas fight, that's one of these that we might have to mention. It's brutal. It's sad because Pinklin Thomas, at one time he's allegedly the undefeated heavyweight champion, whether people believe these titles or not, and he had already deteriorated fighting an undefeated Mike Tyson, never been knocked down, an undefeated Evander Holyfield, never knocked down. Now he's facing an undefeated Riddick Bowe, never knocked down, and he's basically there at this point to be a really talented guy who takes a beating. And oh my God, that is one of those fights that I want to scream at the referee, "We stop this thing!" A couple of rounds before they did, Bo is just pummeling him and pummeling him, pummeling him. But I guess the one lesson Bo would learn with Holyfield later, and he learned with Pinklin Thomas, some guys just don't go down, and Pinklin Thomas is just not going to fall to the ground. I don't care how much you beat him senseless, you've got to stop this fight. But that man will not fall down on his own
Well,
volition.
I don't think he was. Didn't Tommy Morrison knock him out in the first round? Was he on the ground in that one?
I don't. Yeah, he did. He scored a knock. I know he defeated Pinklin Thomas, and I think it was an early round knockout. I don't remember if he hit the ground or not because I haven't watched it in a little while. But anyway, at least with Riddick Bowe is pounding him senseless and pounding him senseless, and Thomas just wouldn't, at least, wouldn't fall to the ground. The only one that never fell to the ground was Oliver McCall. Sooner or later, all of them eventually hit the ground, and Pinklin Thomas hit the ground too, but
Yeah,
not against Bowe.
and then like 5 or 6 months later, he fought Terrell Biggs. I think that was on ABC. And Biggs gave him a tough fight. Biggs was a talented big guy. His head always wasn't in it either, but he ended up
Yeah,
stopping Biggs in 8 rounds.
good fourth round by Biggs, but Biggs is one of those people that really ended up really disappointing me and what it takes to be a champion and whatever goes on in Evander Holyfield's head that makes him what he is. Evander Holyfield's so special. But Biggs, he had the size, the boxing talent. It seems like he's a big guy. He's as big as Bo. Seems like he should be able to hit hard, and yet something just wasn't there in his heart. He won Olympic gold, but as a professional, just something wasn't there. And so when he's fighting Biggs, it almost seems like, I don't know, he's a smaller fighter, but he seems like the weaker fighter somehow. I don't know what it, something wasn't in Biggs' heart to be champion. And Bo at least proved that night, whatever Terrell Biggs is, Bo is better than
Well,
Biggs.
I think just the difference between the two of them, they were both really good boxers, but really Bo could punch. And Terrell Biggs never really had knockout power.
Yeah, it's kind of like I said, surprising. He's both sides, but I guess Buster Douglas kind of had that as a reputation. Good jab, but not a really hard punch. And I don't know how, if you're that big, you don't have a hard punch. But boxing is what it is. And you're right. I would say Biggs did not appear to have any sort of a knockout power. That guy's smaller than him. Evander Holyfield has knockout power more than Biggs, and Holyfield's a lot smaller guy.
Yeah, but Biggs's problem, I think, was when he went to the pros, he fought like he did in the amateurs, and he never really would set his feet and get any leverage when he threw punches.
Yeah, that could be. There must be a reason for it. And he had Dundee as his trainer too, so I don't understand what happened. But also, I know when he fought Tyson, he looked a little bit worried. He looked a little bit afraid. There's something like when I see Evander Holyfield smaller that you're like, you're gonna slug it out with these big guys. I would never want to slug it out with a guy that's 4 inches taller than me and 30 pounds heavier than me. But you've got to have that heart. And Biggs just whatever, it didn't have the heart. And Bo eventually proved he did.
Yeah, and then Bo probably had his toughest test to date. He fought Tony Tubbs. Tony Tubbs actually weighed 234, and it probably about the closest he was ever to in shape, at least in the previous 10 years. And
That is funny.
the 80s is full of guys like that. And really, I mean, in the end, I think Bo ended up being a guy like that. But when you look at this fight, I mean, the judges' scores on it were 96-94, 96-94, 97-94. And I think the one thing about Bo here is this, though. He proved in this fight that he could out-jab a slick boxer, and he had proven a few months before or a year before that he could knock out a slugger in Burke Cooper. And I think this is where, even though he wasn't overly impressive against Tubbs, we realized that he could deal with different styles.
Well, yeah, definitely it went the distance, but the whole Tubbs thing about the way he looked, I guess you got to be boxing guys like us to realize why we're laughing, how stupid it is. But Tony Tubbs always looked a little bit like Tony Galento. He looked like a short, stubby guy who wasn't necessarily fat, but stocky doesn't begin to describe his look. And gave Mike Tyson a pretty good first round when he thought Mike Tyson was undefeated.
Yeah, but he weighed 247 pounds. If you remember,
well, he always looked like that.
He forfeited like $200,000 because if he would have weighed in under 235 or 238, they'd have given him like a $200,000 bonus, and he still showed up overweight.
But I will say he showed up to Bo looking about as good as Tony Tubbs can possibly look. He looked in shape. He always has, it's very interesting, his footwork, because he doesn't dance and he doesn't shuffle, but he does move around and doesn't make himself that easy a target. And he's a little bit smaller, so it's really easy to start missing with those jabs. So that was just another good test, to give somebody like Bo, Pinklin Thomas, and then fading Seldon and fighting whatchamacallit, we were talking about him anyway, and then facing Tubbs, he's moving along the line. He's facing good boxers. He's facing better boxers. He's facing unusual boxers, and he's facing different styles. And these are talented guys. Whether you believe they were ever champion or not, that we could always argue about forever. But they certainly weren't chumps. And in Biggs was the other one I was thinking of. But he was fighting guys and progressively showing he could beat them. And he wasn't even looking quite as puzzled as sometimes Larry Holmes looked when things, weren't going his way. He just looked like he was just ready to kind of wait for him to get his own style going, and all these guys he handled pretty well, considering he was a young guy, maybe almost too young. I mean, maybe that was the problem with him. He was being too successful at too young an age.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chris, but in the 1980s, the only real heavyweight champions were Larry Holmes, Michael Spinks, and then Mike Tyson.
That could be, as I said, they have these alphabet
It's
people and
not
all
could
that
be,
stuff.
it is. All right, next up, we've got Bruce Seldon, who who was famous for fainting in front of Mike Tyson. He also fainted in front of, you know, Riddick Bowe in the first round. So you
well,
had
so
that
he,
win.
He's the person that at least, if you claim Mike Tyson was a two-time champion.
I don't claim
Mike Tyson,
that because he wasn't.
Well, that's who Evander Holyfield met to become the third-time champion. But whatever it is, Bruce Seldon had a certain reputation. He fought Tony Tucker for 15 rounds, and I will say for, you know, I would have gambled the house if Tucker had beat Seldon, you know, against Tyson, just because I would have had odds that were incredible. But Seldon did have that victory over Tucker, which allegedly made him a champion enough that Mike Tyson, if he fought him, was champion, allegedly, whether we all
he
agree
wasn't.
On these things
he
or
wasn't.
Not.
He just can't be, because Tony Tucker was never a heavyweight champion.
Well, it was one of these vacant fights where nobody actually beat somebody to get to fight for the title.
It was just fake titles by fake alphabet organizations that want to screw fighters out of money.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't really know. As I said, it's just sooner or later you. So that's the interesting thing about boxing is you write it from your heart and you write it the best you can, but it's always a little confusing and a little bit bizarre.
Larry Holmes beat Muhammad Ali. Michael Spinks beat him. Mike Tyson beat him. Buster Douglas beat him. Holyfield beat him. Michael Moore beat him. George Foreman beat him. There's no Bruce Seldon in that mix.
Well, then who's after George Foreman? I mean, George Foreman, nobody beat him to become a heavyweight champion after Foreman.
Yeah, so it was vacant until 1999.
So then it's vacant. Who's fighting for the vacancy?
There was nobody that fought for the vacancy of a legitimate heavyweight championship.
Well, then nobody's going to be champion after Foreman if you don't say somebody's fighting for...
Yeah, they are, because in 1999, you had Holyfield and Lewis, who were recognized as the number one and two guys, and they fought each other, and that's how you got it. It's how the ring always did it. If a guy was vacant for 2 years, if one fought two, then that was considered a champion.
I'll say this, because, you know, this boxing has such a long history. It used to be so easy. Back, actually, thousands of years ago, it was a lot easier because there's Olympia. There was one competition every 4 years, and whoever won it, that's your champion, period. And, of course, it's been confusing since. But I think the public kind of decides what they think. So, ultimately, we do regard Bo as a heavyweight champion. We regard Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson as champions.
Well, Bo was the heavyweight champion.
But the Pinklin
Holyfield.
But the Pinklin Thomases or the Tony Tubbs or Tim Witherspoon, and I think Tim Witherspoon's a great fighter. I really like Tim Witherspoon. But whether you view them on the same level as heavyweight champion, a lot of people don't. Larry Holmes,
all I know is
this: champion.
You can't have more than one world champion.
I agree with that. That's the way I wish it worked.
No, that's the way it works. I don't know why we would wish that. It's just the way it is. I mean, nobody really thinks Charles Martin was ever the heavyweight champion of the world.
I think we sort of acknowledge the WBA and the WBC have their different two fighters, but you're right, there's other ones after that, and it does become confusing because it seems like everybody's fighting for the heavyweight title.
Not
everybody can be champion.
The WBA and the WBC are horseshit organizations too. I mean, we all
Absolutely.
Know who the best, who the real world champion is. In 1980, when Mike Weaver knocked out John Tate, nobody really thought Mike Weaver was the heavyweight champion because we just watched a year earlier, you know, Weaver get beat by Holmes. And
yeah, no. First of all, I love that fight. So, but I will say, I agree with you in my own heart that after Larry Holmes, we won't even get into Ken Norton, but that Larry Holmes was the champion for several years, and when they called other people champion at the same time, Holmes was the guy I viewed as the champion.
Yeah, everybody viewed Holmes as the champion.
Well,
not
all these alphabet titles, but I think the public
but
did.
But those don't matter.
I think the public
those
did,
are
and
made
I agree.
Up. Those are made up for money, for monetary gain.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all fraud. Don King owned a lot of these guys, so if you didn't go along with Don King, you could be great, and you wouldn't even get a chance to fight for a title. How fair is that?
Well,
Meanwhile, you could be lesser.
Look what was
lesser.
Done with Weaver when he fought Michael Doakes. I mean,
I just thought it was a great fight. I just thought it was a great fight, and I liked Mike Weaver, and I like Doakes. You know, Doakes.
Actually, and this is a good segue.
Bo took out Doakes. Oh, okay.
But tonight on our Legends of Boxing show, former WBA heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Weaver, will be with me and Jeremiah. That'll be around 9 o'clock Eastern tonight, live.
Let me nice to him. I love Mike Weaver. Mike
I
Weaver
do
is one of my
too.
heroes.
I do too. I think Mike Weaver would have been a lot better fighter if it wasn't for Don King screwing him over against Doakes, because I think that took a lot out of him.
Well, don't waste airtime with this, but there's a guy in Arizona that watched him knock out Doakes and thought it was one of the most exciting rounds he ever saw in his life, and exhilarated me toward boxing.
He
You
didn't
don't have to
knock
waste
out
his time with all
Doakes.
that.
He didn't knock out
Yeah,
Doakes.
I thought they had a 15th round, and he was way behind. He had no chance of
No,
winning.
that was John
And
Tate. John Tate.
oh, it was Tate. Oh God, I'm so sorry. Well, then tell him it was Tate, and it was an exhilarating moment of my life. My memory's getting bad on me here, but you're right. It was Tate, not Doakes. So,
Well,
but it was incredible. But I was a little kid then. It was a
you
long
know,
time ago.
Chris, I don't want to hear that our boxing historian's memory is going.
That's not a good sign. That is a bad sign.
All right, so let's get to the interesting fights of Riddick Bowe. And
Okay.
yes, I'm bringing up Elijah Tillery in Washington, D.C., the Washington Convention Center. It was known as one of the craziest fights with most of the bizarre conclusions ever. Bowe dominated the first round, dropped Tillery. After the round ended, Tillery walked towards Bowe, taunted him. Bowe responded by punching Tillery. Tillery then threw several low kicks at Bowe, who then unleashed a flurry of punches. Rock Newman comes in, grabs Tillery from the ring apron from behind, pulls him over the rope. All hell breaks loose as Tillery somersaults over the ropes. Security has to come in, and I mean, that was basically the end of the fight. They fought a
Yeah, both.
rematch. I mean, Rock Newman was just basically a guy that was trying to get attention for himself, and he did it here too. And this was probably the start of Rock Newman's stardom.
Yeah, I mean, Rock Newman says he's through with boxing, and I'm like, well, don't let the door hit you on the way out, you know?
He's through with boxing because nobody else will want to work with him after all this shit he pulled to get with Bo.
And he did, and some of these fights, you know, we'll get on to go on to it later and stuff. But they were turning to madhouses in the ring. I mean, these were serious things where people should have been arrested and put in jail. They're madhouses. This is, you know, not something you see with other sports, and you really shouldn't see it with boxing. I don't care how crazy, you know, boxing is in its own way. There shouldn't be all these thugs around and these things turning into fights. And if nothing else, the promoter should be hiring more police officers or something, because you're right, some of these things got a little out of control. And Rock Newman seemed to be in the middle of all this. And then he gave a speech afterwards about political stuff that, you know, who knows what was, you know, it's like, shut up. You know, Rock Newman was bad for boxing, but he's good for Riddick Bowe, I think.
I think it was good for Rock Newman. Let's see. We get to November 1992, which is why we're doing Riddick Bowe today, 25th anniversary of one of the greatest heavyweight title fights of all time. He fights reigning champion Evander Holyfield for the undisputed heavyweight title. I think everybody questioned his heart and dedication, but Bowe, similar to what we talked about Tubbs, this is one time he came in shape and ready to go. And the 10th round of that fight was maybe one of the most epic, brutal back-and-forth changes in a heavyweight fight in boxing history. He ends up beating Holyfield, and I think he won the fight by at least 3 or 4 points. But that was a great fight. It showed, to me, it's kind of the equivalent of March 15th, 1971. That night, Joe Frazier was one of the five greatest heavyweights that ever lived, and I think the same can be said about Riddick Bowe on this one night.
Yeah, I agree, and I agree that if nothing else, you know, there might be a time in your life, maybe just one time in your life, where opportunity knocks, and you just got to have your act together. And he was ready for Evander Holyfield, undefeated, Evander Holyfield, he did win most of the rounds, I think. Holyfield didn't fight him very smart, I got to say. Holyfield decided to slug it out with a guy a lot bigger than him, and Bo. Though he looked a little bit like he knew for once. He knew, you know, I'm facing somebody. This isn't Pinklin Thomas. This isn't Terrell Biggs. This is the real deal, and Evander Holyfield is the real deal, and he's hitting you harder and different than what you're used to. And Bo seemed to gain confidence as the early to middle rounds, it led to the 10th round, which was spectacular, back and forth. He looks like he's going to put Holyfield to the canvas, and he doesn't. But Holyfield starts stunning him toward the end, and then finally, Bo knocks Holyfield down in the 11th round. Second time Holyfield's had a knockdown, but only the first time since he's actually touched the ground. and just a great fight. And it's just that's so wonderful that Riddick Bowe cared about himself enough that he had worked so hard, really gone up the ladder perfectly, and finally he's ready for the undefeated real deal. Evander Holyfield knows he's facing one of the great ones already, and he was prepared. And I think he thought he might have to box more and jab more, and he did use his jab effectively. But also he realized that, hey, Holyfield wants to slug it out, and this is a smaller guy. If he wants to slug it out, I'll throw punches with him too.
Now, this is where things get a little murky. He becomes the heavyweight champion of the world, wins the decision. At the same time, Lennox Lewis, or actually it was a couple weeks earlier, Lennox Lewis knocked out Canadian Donovan Razor Ruddock in two rounds, establishing himself as the WBC's number one contender. The Bowe Holyfield and Lewis Riddick fights were part of a mini tournament whereby all four fighters agreed the two winners would meet for the undisputed World Heavyweight Championship. Bowe's manager, Rock Newman, made a proposal. And see, I don't think that Bowe was necessarily afraid of Lewis. I think Rock Newman is the one that was afraid of Lennox Lewis, because Rock Newman made a proposal for the fight that a $32 million purse HBO was offering should be split 90-10 in Bowe's favor. And, of course, Frank Maloney said that was absurd. They also offered him like $2 million to fight on a Bowe undercard. Maloney said that he didn't trust the Bowe camp and that the aforementioned financial negotiations were a joke, because they were. So in the end, that's why they didn't fight. I think this is more on Rock Newman than it is Riddick Bowe.
Well, that could be. I mean, I'll think that more now than I would have thought a week ago, because your impressions are, I mean, we're not just historians trying to, you know, let people know this and that, but we're fans. And when you're a fan, you look at and think about things different. So I did think about Lennox Lewis, you know, dominating Bowe during the Olympics, that it turned out he didn't dominate him quite as much as I thought, and that maybe Bowe wasn't afraid of Lewis, though obviously that's the fight you want. And then, as you said, Bowe and Lewis were, if they were co-champions, I got to say, I always view Bowe as the champion and not Lewis, and that Lewis, it felt like it was unfair, because you knew Lewis was one of the best fighters in the heavyweight division, if not the best, and it didn't seem like he was getting a chance to be number one, and that getting to fight Bowe, getting to fight Tyson, getting to fight Holyfield, was he needed to go through those three guys, and it took a while before they would face him. So it seemed a little unfair for poor Lewis, though Oliver McCall knocked him out in the second round, gave him a 10 count. But nonetheless, Lewis still seemed like he was one of the top two or three and wasn't getting his chance. And Bowe at the time was champion. I thought of him as the champion. And then Holyfield and Tyson, though, was a fight everybody wanted to see. It didn't matter who was heavyweight champion. Everybody wanted to see Tyson fight Holyfield. Unfortunately, Tyson's in a prison cell, so it was going to take a while.
Now, here's my thing. We get 1993. He makes two title defenses. The first one is against Michael Doakes. Doakes, in, I think it was in 1989, had an epic encounter with Evander Holyfield.
Yeah,
another one of those things where this showed what Michael Doakes could do when he was in shape and not all coked up, but it didn't happen that often.
And I am telling you, I'm a huge Evander Holyfield fan. He fought Doakes a little dirty, and I'm saying as a Holyfield fan.
Well,
so
this is the thing.
I don't know if he'd fought him.
Evander Holyfield.
He beat Doakes, and it was a great fight, but I did think Holyfield fought a little dirty.
Well,
and
I think
love
Evander
Holyfield
fought everybody a little bit dirty.
Maybe you have to in boxing. You think about it, George Foreman's a minister, but he fought guys sometimes a little bit dirty. You know, they all maybe do have to a little bit, you know. It's
you
boxing.
Have to. It's a fight. If you're in a fight, how can you really be dirty? It's a fight.
When I talked to Tommy Morrison about George Foreman's low blows, he said, shit, it's boxing. I expect it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you don't go Lotta on somebody, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah,
you're right. Now that's what we're going to get. It's going to go a little too far.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Bowe's first defense, Michael Doakes. Doakes had been knocked out devastatingly by Donovan Razor Ruddock, I think, a couple years before. Bowe basically just went out, blew him out in the first round.
Yep.
He comes back for his second fight. He fights Jesse, the Boogeyman Ferguson. Knocked him out in the second round.
And really had him knocked out in the first round. That was a...
Yeah.
Boy, that referee, I can't imagine. He must be like, 100 years old, how slow he counts to 10. But Ferguson probably should have been out in the first round. But nonetheless, he was out about 20 seconds into the second round.
Yeah, and then he gets the rematch with Holyfield. And he was overweight. He entered training camp at 266. He weighed in at 246 for the fight, which was 11 pounds heavier than he was for the first fight. And once again, Bo Holyfield made for a great fight. Bo ended up losing his belts on a majority decision. The fight also, of course, was known for a bizarre stunt in which James the Fan Man Miller drops into the arena during the seventh round. And once again, it was a surreal scene as the corner for Riddick Bowe's out there with walkie-talkies and stuff beating the hell out of this guy. And basically chaos ensued for nearly a half hour. And I know that Bo stated afterwards he thought the bout should have been declared a technical draw or a no contest, owing to the unfair delay.
He was also, in retrospect, they were saying, oh, it may have benefited Holyfield because he got this extra time to rest. But Bo was already huffing and puffing by that time.
Yeah, he was overweight. A half hour delay is going to help him.
He was overweight, and also because I think he knocked out Doakes in the first round and knocked out Ferguson. Essentially, in the first round, though, it went technically two rounds. I think he thought, and Holyfield slugged it out with him the first time around. I just figured he thought, oh, Holyfield's going to slug it out with me, and this thing's not going to go too long. But Holyfield, being Holyfield, decided to box. And I got to tell you, it's one of these things as a fan. I remember I was in Tijuana, Mexico, watching it, and I definitely had it my tequila and beer because this was supposed to be the end of Evander Holyfield. It was like, oh, Evander Holyfield had this great run, never got to fight Mike Tyson, sort of his tragedy because it's like he's being blamed for not fighting Mike Tyson, even though it's not his fault. And this is the end. Bo's going to beat him again. I wouldn't gamble on it. I just thought Holyfield has no chance. And Holyfield was so smart, outboxed him. I did not expect Bo to come in overweight, and he did. And then the parachute drops in the seventh round, and I'm jumping from my chair in the bar and screaming, you know, what the hell? I'm acting crazy. Everybody's acting crazy. And it's like, it did last about 20 minutes to 30 minutes of delay. And Holyfield was just very, very smart. He didn't just sort of methodically barely win these rounds. He was getting outpunched and outlanded the first fight, and this time he's outpunching and outlanding. He simply was a different person than fought that first fight, and Bo is a different person than fought that first fight.
Yeah, and I think that basically the fact that you see how much better shape Holyfield is the second time, Bo wasn't, I think that is the only reason, because let's face it, Riddick Bo with his skills is never going to lose to Evander Holyfield against his skills if they're both perfectly conditioned. Because
that,
he was just too big.
That I can't tell you. I think he is too big, but also Holyfield fought a very smart boxing bout the second time around. And when he fought Mike Tyson the first time around, he was a much smarter boxer than I expected. Holyfield could be because he's willing to stand in there with guys, sometimes he doesn't box as much as he should. And then other times he gets smart and he realizes this is a time where I got to prepare a little different. So even if you're watching films on him, he's going to come at you different than what he expected. And Bo had never seen this Evander Holyfield before. And yes, he was out of shape, but he was also a little bit puzzled by this Holyfield.
Yeah,
though,
I think he was puzzled because he was out of shape, Christopher.
But
if you're slower, it's going to be easier for Holyfield to box you.
I think if they face a third time and Bo has faced this Holyfield, the second Holyfield, he's ready for him the third time around. So if they're both in shape, I think Bo has definitely, without question, the advantages. He wasn't ready for this Evander Holyfield. And I think even if he's in shape, this Evander Holyfield, he might beat him, but it's a puzzling Evander Holyfield. And Bo wasn't quite ready for that still because you can't prepare for Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield is very special and unique. I don't know what would happen if Bo came into shape, but I will say that Evander Holyfield fought a very, very smart fight and he boxed. He did not just sit there and slug it out, and you can underestimate Evander Holyfield as a boxer sometimes.
All right, and then in August of 1994, he fought two comeback fights. He faced a much smaller Buster Mathis Jr., and he actually struggled with Buster Mathis Jr., and then finally, he hit Mathis while he was down with what was ruled as an accidental blow. The bout was ruled a no contest by Arthur McCanny Sr., and then in December 1994, Bo punches Larry Donald at a pre-fight press conference before later beating him by a 12-round unanimous decision. So I know a lot of people complain about Gallada and how dirty he is, and he is. He's a psycho. But, I mean, Bo was pretty damn dirty also.
Yeah, and he also, we were talking about Larry Holmes, that people that have a way of either coming across charismatic or are coming across as not so likable. And for whatever reason, Mike Tyson came across a lot of people likable. But Evander Holyfield didn't necessarily come across as likable, but he didn't rub people the wrong way. People just kind of respected his craft. But Bo was a person that rubbed people the wrong way. And even when he threw the belts, you know, because he would fight Lennox Lewis into the trash can, and of course Rock Newman's right next to him when he's doing this, he didn't come across well sometimes in his public relations.
Well, I think maybe he didn't come across well because he probably had Rock Newman telling him what to do, plus nobody liked Rock Newman, so standing next to Rock Newman is going to make a lot of people not like you to begin with.
Yeah, and Bo may just be a shy guy. He seemed like he kind of struggled a little bit with his words, which, you know, you could be, you know, being articulate and talking to in front of a camera can be different, and Rock Newman loved the camera, so you couldn't get him to shut up. But Bo always came across like he was just struggling a little bit to kind of say what he wanted to say or the way he wanted to say it. And so sometimes when he tried, obviously he admired Muhammad Ali because he sometimes tried to kind of pretend he was Muhammad Ali. And it came across ridiculous when he tried to be Muhammad Ali. But you know, that's who you know and that's who you admire. And it's hard to be yourself sometimes when this limelight has hit you.
All right, then Bo wins a version of the title, the World Body Odor version, the WBO. He beats Herbie Hyde 6 times and somehow becomes a portion of the heavyweight champion there. But then you get to Jorge Luis Gonzalez, who they were arch rivals in the amateurs. And the pre-fight build-up here was weird, as Gonzalez declared a desire to eat Bo's heart, likened himself to a lion. He made out Bo to be a hyena. The guy was basically, I mean, a bald-headed dude with a bad haircut, not a very talented professional boxer. He got his ass kicked by Riddick Bowe, and, I mean, it had to be embarrassing for him after all the claims he made. And I remember watching, I think on maybe Holyfield Moore too, I remember seeing him in an undercard in a bar on a pay-per-view event before this fight even, just having to go life and death with a 40-year-old Ronaldo Snipes.
Well, these guys, you know, I never quite like all that, you know, pre-fight stuff where they have to act like they hate each other or not. I respect that even though, you know, both said bad things about Holyfield before the second fight, that ultimately they became friends. And ultimately, the other thing about the second fight, before I can just mention one more time, they had at least 4 times where they were fighting after the rounds. In the fourth round, they were fighting 20 seconds after the bell. In the 15th round, Holyfield had to be tackled because, you know, he wanted to keep fighting. Anyway, that's real fighting. All this pre-fight stuff where they're calling each other names and want to eat somebody's heart. I remember Tyson used to talk like that he wanted to murder Lennox Lewis's kids or something like that.
He wanted to eat him.
Yeah, I want to eat. I don't really get into all that, but you know, I guess it's boxing and promotion. It's been going on for forever since Mendoza was, you know, taking on Humphreys, you know, in the 1780s and 1790s.
All right. That brings us to Bo Holyfield 3, another great fight. Holyfield actually puts Bo down. Bo knocks Holyfield down, and Holyfield actually looked like he had him hurt right before Bo landed and knocked him out. It was a great fight. Bo's weight problem, I mean, I still think he was overweight in that fight too. Not as bad as it would be in his next fight. But, I mean, Bo showed a lot of heart again. And the thing about Bo is this. I mean, I put Bo up there with Larry Holmes, guys like that, for heart during the fight. His problem was he never had that heart outside of the ring.
Well, I'll say this about the third fight, that, you know, one of the things I hope, you know, you do get, you mentioned maybe interviewing George Foreman and stuff. Watching these fights, George Foreman does a lot of the commentary. He does a great job. George Foreman, he's so great at everything, I'm jealous. I wish I could be half as good at anything he's good at. But he also provides excellent commentary. He was really worried about Holyfield and thought this fight should have been stopped in the fourth and fifth rounds, because I don't know what goes on with Holyfield, but when he fought Moore, and especially when he fought Bo for those first 4 or 5 rounds, it's not just that Bo's beating him, which he is, but he's also having trouble breathing. He looks like he's having serious, serious breathing problems. And something was supposed to be wrong with his heart, though Holyfield said he claims he talked to God and God cured him. But he does look like he's having breathing problems against Bo, and it looks like they should stop this fight. And then out of nowhere, Holyfield knocks Bo down for the first time in Bo's career in the sixth round. And And then it looked like that took out all the energy out of Holyfield. Like there was that was
well,
it. And then Bo knocks him out in the eighth round, 10 count.
I think when you overuse steroids, that stuff happens. And everything that happened to him in the first Moore fight to that Bo fight. And the thing is this, if you look at him, he looked completely different after the third Bo fight. He was not quite as big as what he had been after that fight.
I'll say this, what Tommy Morrison said, Tommy Morrison said, I use steroids, I admit it. And I said, well, how many heavyweights in the 1990s do you think were using them? He goes, all of them. I goes, I can't prove it. I think all of them are using it. And it's easy to pin the people you don't like and say, oh, they're on steroids.
Oh,
but
I
the
love
people
Holyfield,
liked it,
and I know.
No, I mean the people you liked it too. I liked Roger Clemens. Hey, he used steroids. Barry Bonds used them. They were using them in track. They were using them probably in golf. Who knows? But they were definitely using them in boxing. And I love Evander Holyfield, but if you say, did he dope up? He probably did. Tyson did. They probably all did.
Yeah, and I think that that's where this problem that he had for 3 or 4 years came from. And like I said, if you look at his build from the first Bo fight to the second Bo fight, I mean, he was not as lean as what he was before. And the thing is this, when you get around 30 years old, it's hard to pack on 10 or 15 pounds of muscle in a year.
Yeah, no, I hate to say it, cause, you know, but it was probably drugs rather than God intervened and just cured him. And I believe in God. I'm Catholic. But these guys are using drugs, and the boxers you hate use drugs, and the boxers you like use drugs. They were all doing it.
All right, real quick, we're going to go take a break to hear a word from our sponsor, MyBookie.ag. We will be back in 1 minute and 9 seconds, and we will go through Bo Golota.
Hey, Puckheads, this is Patrick.
And Jason.
From the Puck Guys podcast at the Grueling Truth Network, and we're here with one simple message. If you're watching the games, it's time to start making money.
The Grueling Truth has partnered with MyBookie.ag, an industry-leading sportsbook website who reminds you that where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why The Grueling Truth urges you to check out MyBookie.ag.
In addition to the usual thousands of odds, money lines, proposition bets, and futures offered on MyBookie.ag daily, they also have in-game live betting and a mobile site that makes wagering on the go easier than ever. So join now, and MyBookie.ag will give you a 50% bonus on your first deposit of up to $3,000 in extra cash. Just enter the promo code TGT50. That's TGT50 to take advantage of this offer. Where do they got to go, Jay?
That is a smart-looking question, Pat. They need to go to visit MyBookie.ag, courtesy of the Grueling Truth Network, and enjoy your winning today.
MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back to the Grueling Truth Sports Network. I'm your host, Mike Goodpasser, sitting here with Christopher Shelton. We're on the Old Time Boxing Show, talking about the career of Riddick Bowe. And we're going to go to Big Daddy's fight with Andrew Golota. And this was a fight, Chris, that I don't think anybody in the world thought it was anything other than just Golota. Basically, it was just a stepping stone for what Bowe wanted to do next. And, of course, Bowe thought that, too. And he came into the ring at that fight at 252 pounds. He didn't take Golota seriously. And Golota was a really talented heavyweight.
I think he proved that by the way he fought, Bo. But going into it, you're right, he was sort of an unknown. He was undefeated, never been knocked down, just a big Polish guy. But he hadn't fought anybody. And he kind of felt, always going up against somebody of Bo's caliber, this may not last very long. And he really... All fouls aside, he outboxed Bo through both fights, but certainly the first one for concentrating on that. The problem was he kept winning round after round, but then getting fouls on him, so the scoring had to be very bizarre.
Yeah, and the scoring at the time of the stoppage had Golota up by 2-2 and 1 point, even with the deductions. And, I mean, this was a fight looked bad.
Which is astounding, because to mention that, just to point out to other people and stuff, when he is ahead by a couple points, you know, when they had a stoppage and a disqualification, which was absolutely deserved, but nonetheless, that he's only up by 2 points means these disqualifications kept him from being up by 4 or 5 points, which means he was really dominating these rounds, and they would have been if he didn't have fouls. 10-8 rounds, maybe even a 10-7 round here or there. He was really dominating this thing, but he just kept landing low blows and occasionally a headbutt, and he couldn't seem to help himself. It didn't even look like – it was hard to tell whether it was an accident. George Foreman said, no, this is no longer an accident. This is a guy who's intentionally doing the wrong thing. It's hard to tell because he's fighting so wild.
Yeah, and the thing is this. He had to fight under control. There was no reason to do it. But he seemed to be a guy that mentally was not very tough. I mean, you saw that when he fainted against Lennox Lewis, and he basically fainted against Mike Tyson. I mean, he wanted no part of that. And I think this is a guy that, and from everything I saw, he was a guy that was a really good amateur. But when he came to this country, his goal was to make enough money to become a truck driver and do that all the time. So I don't think this is a guy whose heart was really into boxing.
Well, he's always thinking of styles make fights. So, well, after the two bow fights, yes, he was knocked out by Lennox Lewis, given a championship fight in one round against Mike Tyson. He quit in a very bizarre fashion after the second round. But anyway, he fought Bo really competitively, and we haven't got to the second fight yet. But both these fights, he seemed to dominate the boxing. He seemed to out-jab Bo. He seemed to have faster hand speed than Bo. He matched up well against Bo, and at a certain point, you think somebody would tell him, you don't need to cheat anymore. If you could just hang in there.
You could sit there and hear them between rounds. Do not hit him to the body.
Yeah. Well, as I say, he seemed to be out of control. He seemed like he couldn't help it. I don't even know if he's out of control because he didn't look like he was in a frenzy or something. But he looked like he couldn't help it. He just had to keep landing these low blows, and they were vicious low blows. I mean, this isn't like we were arguing whether Max Schmeling could have got up after a couple of these low blows, a week ago. Bo, those are hard hits he's taking. I can understand. Foreman still said, "Don't lay on the ground. Don't let your opponent get confidence," but I don't know how you don't lay on the ground. Those are some hard blows from a 250-pound guy that's like 6'5", who's nailing you right under the crotch. You know, these are hard shots, and I hate disqualifications, but I agree, unfortunately, with both of them, because you especially hate it when the guy ahead gets disqualified. But it's really hard to argue that these disqualifications weren't valid.
Yeah, and the problem came, you had Polish fans, you had Bo fans, there was like 11 or 12,000 people there that night, but the thing was, there was no New York Police Department presence during the fight. Jeez. They were told that Madison Square Garden chose to have their own security, which looked like a bunch of 60-year-old men, so this brawl ensued for a good 10 or 15 minutes before the New York Police Department even showed up. I mean, Lou Duva looked like he was dead on the ring when they
knocked him down. Yeah.
And I mean,
all hell broke loose. Lou Duva being taken out on a stretcher. Just these thugs taking over everything and fighting in all directions. Chandler Lampley said, "This is the first fight I've ever been where I'm actually terrified." It was a madhouse that after that first fight and the disqualification and disgusting. Sometimes these things happen in boxing, but this is an out of control fight that had an out of control brawl following the disqualification.
Yeah, and you had Rock Newman leading the charge into the
ring,
making a fool out of himself. He was later suspended by the New York State Athletic Commission, fined $250,000, suspended for a year. That takes us to the second fight, which they fought in Atlantic City, New Jersey, which is really one of the most brutal heavyweight fights you'll ever see.
Well, it is. I 100% agree. When you just say top 10, I don't know about top 10 best fights, but the top 10 brutal fights, this is definitely in the top 10 for brutality, without question. Just vicious in its violence of two heavyweights, and one of them outboxing, but also throwing a lot of dirty punches, and the other one throwing hard punches too. Brutal. Just absolutely vicious and brutal.
Well, brutal and bizarre. And I'll tell you, the thing that still gets me was the ring entrance. With Riddick Bowe, born in the USA, and then the surreal entrance of the Polish national anthem and Andrew Golota. It looks something like out of medieval times where the fighters are getting ready to come in and fight.
Yeah, I guess Bowe thought that a lot of Americans were rooting for Golota because he's either white or he gave such a great first fight and stuff, so he put on Born in the USA. Of course, the irony of that is Born in the USA is not a pro-American type songs about a guy, in Vietnam who's struggling with, PTSD.
Yeah.
But But anyway, you're right. Golota came out with the national anthem. And then I was really especially surprised about this fight because this was incidentally after Holyfield had knocked out Tyson. So whether you believe it or not, Holyfield would be champion again at this time. And Golota knocks down Bo in the second round, a legitimate knockdown, only the second time Bo's been knocked down. And then Bo knocks Golota down in the fourth round, first time Golota's ever been down. And then Golota knocks Bo down in the fifth round. And these are all legitimate knockdowns mixed in with all these dirty punches and headbutting by Golota, mostly against Bo. Bo wasn't always the nicest guy on the block either. You know, he'd hit in the back of the head and stuff like that too. He wasn't an angel, but Golota is like, you know, Sharky, the Tom Sharky of his day. This is one of the dirtiest fighters you're ever going to come across.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, I like Golota. I mean, Bo came in shape, but I think the problem was you had the three fights with Holyfield. You had that fight with, you know, Golota before. I think no matter what kind of shape he came in, his reflexes were not what they used to be. And some guys, you know, Jake LaMotta can fight all these wars and live to be 94 and talk fine. Other guys,
right,
it only takes one or two fights. And
yeah, that's very interesting because I was thinking about the same thing too. I was thinking, we know, and I think you're going to talk about it, Riddick Bowe's struggling a little bit. But anyway, why isn't Evander Holyfield have brain damage? This guy kept fighting bigger guys who kept smashing, maybe he will one day, kept smashing him and smashing him and smashing him to the head. And there's this incredible resilience, and he still seems to be okay. George Foreman sounds great. George Foreman sounds like he's never been in a fight in his life. He sounds so articulate. But you're right, but Bowe, in a shorter time, took a different kind of pounding, and it seemed to affect him. And I will say again, with a lot of low punches, because you know, I actually like a lot on some level, like people like Sharky. You know, they were dirty and they hurt Bo. And Foreman said, I don't care what kind of boxer shape you get into, you cannot prepare for that kind of a punch. You cannot prepare for that kind of an illegal punch that Golota was inflicting repeatedly on Bo.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the problems with the CET and all that stuff come from, number one, genetics. It's just some people are more predisposed to that. But I also do think your diet has a lot to do with that. And I think having to lose 40 or 50 pounds between each fight really can be a problem. And if you look at the guys from the 80s that had weight issues,
yeah,
almost all of them have had some kind of problem memory-wise.
Well, and you know, Muhammad Ali, for everyone, you know, sort of feeling for him in his tough state, by the time he passed away, it was really all the guys around him had already passed away younger than him. It's really a brutal sport and such, and some people seem to handle it, able to physically deal with it better than others. And when he says diet and stuff like that, I don't know, but I will say that George Foreman, again, I really appreciate his commentary because he really feels for the boxers when they're out there, heavyweights especially. And he says there's a way to lose weight. There's a way to do things. And a lot of these boxers, and he can seem to tell instantly, did they do it the right way, the wrong way, and this and that. So you're right. Both sometimes, even when he tried to get in shape, maybe he didn't lose weight exactly the right way. Foreman seemed to detect it like snapping of the fingers. He detected it right away.
Yeah, and when you look back at Bo's career, the Lewis fight's not the one that I miss seeing. I would have loved to have seen him fight Mike Tyson.
I think he would have done very well against Mike Tyson.
But I think he would have kicked Tyson's ass.
And he tried that one. He didn't avoid because he visited Tyson when he was in prison and said, "Look, I really want to fight you when you get out." But probably at that time, it was a very unique situation because there are these four heavyweights, and I think the two best heavyweights were, quite frankly, at that moment, in 1995, 96, were Riddick Bowe and Lennox Lewis. It'd be nice to see the two best heavyweights, but what everybody wanted to see was Mike Tyson versus Evander Holyfield. And then they did put on a great first fight and gave everybody what they wanted. But I would have loved to see Bo Lewis because it was very strange that Holyfield and Tyson had all the attention, but the two best at that moment appeared to be Bo Lewis, and then they fought in the amateurs. You really wanted to see them fight as pros, and then it didn't happen, and it appeared to be on Bo's end. I think that is something that kind of stained his legacy a little bit, Lewis.
Yeah, but I think he stained his own legacy by not being prepared all the time and not being dedicated. I think if he would have been, I think his career would have lasted longer, and I think you probably see that fight at some point.
Yeah, I will agree that, you know, it is what it is, and he peaked maybe too early, or he fought so hard to get to that Holyfield fight, so smart and stuff like that, and then he didn't really appear to be the same guy in a sense after that, and I guess I got to give Rock Newman credit that he got Bo to the clouds, to the heavens. He got him to the peak, but I don't know how helpful Rock Newman was after that point.
Yeah, I think Rock Newman was more of a hindrance than anything else after the first fight. The other thing is this. I mean, you look at guys like John Mugabe. He fights Marvin Hagler. He's never the same after that. You know, maybe that first Holyfield fight took more out of Bo, even though he clearly won the fight, than it ever did Holyfield.
That could be. I mean, one thing's for sure, that when Foreman fought Ali, it took more out of Ali than Foreman, even though, you know, Ali scored an eighth-round knockout. Sometimes you can be on the winning end and take a worse beating. And then again, Evander Holyfield is just a very special, unique kind of person because, as I said, when he fought that second fight with Bo, I was drinking tequila and beer in Mexico because I thought that's the end of Evander Holyfield. I go, this is it. This is going to be his last one. It's kind of the retirement bout of Evander Holyfield, and boy, was I wrong. He kept going on. Bo retired, and Evander Holyfield's still fighting for championships, and his legend is growing. It's sort of an amazing thing. Bo peaked and crashed. I don't know if he crashed, but he peaked and then didn't quite go anywhere after he peaked at a young age.
Yeah, and then, of course, after the second Golota fight, things have somehow just continued to spiral downhill for Bo. Of course, he had joining the Marine Corps, which lasted, I think, 2 or 3 days. He was out of there. He had all kind of legal troubles.
What meaning?
He made a short comeback in like 2004, 2005. Beat a guy by the name of Billy Zumbrun that I don't think that Bo even beat him, and Zumbrun was no world beater. And then, of course, as I'm sure everybody's seen, you get the GoFundMe page trying to get money to save his house. And when you hear him talk today, I mean, it's just sad the way this turns out for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we're honest about it. You know, we love boxing and we support boxing, but what we recognize that it can be dangerous, and if Riddick Bowe is struggling and stuff like that with sports athletes, you know, it's very common. ESPN had a terrific 30-30 called Broke that showed that after 5 years in the NFL, 77% declare bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So for you and I, especially me, I go, like, how could people get that much money and lose it all? But you do. Otherwise, it wouldn't be that higher rate. And Riddick Bowe had the same sort of problems, wasn't paying – something going on, not paying his taxes, buying things that are out – you know, you buy things that you really don't need and all kinds of things. But you're right, somehow he ended up broke. And you said you talked to him, and he seems to be struggling a lot. So I'm glad in the Christmas spirit. If anyone wants to help this GoFundMe page, you know, you're not helping a millionaire. You're helping a guy that's struggling. And you can always contact him if you're an attorney or somebody and see, is there a way I could just help you pay some of these bills or help you out? You know, is there something I could do? He's a great champion. And everywhere he goes, you say, hey, champ, but you want him to do well.
Yeah, and the thing is this. My first thought was, well, hell, he had all that money. He blew it. The hell with him. But then when you think about it, with the CTE and everything, and really, he was slurring his speech by the time he got to the third Holyfield fight. So
yeah, and you don't know how well he did about even whether he was actually getting the money or Rock Newman was collecting for him and how he's dealing with it. You trust people.
I'm sure Rock
and
Newman
you can definitely trust the wrong people.
Yeah, and I think Rock Newman would not be the right person to trust. So
I don't think so either.
Yeah, my take is this, with his GoFundMe page, I hope it all works out good for him. But in the end, I think we all know how this probably ends up for him, and it's very sad. I mean, this was a young guy that had his whole life in front of him, and once he got to where he wanted to be, I think he just lost focus on what he wanted in life.
Well, I want to thank you, Mike, for picking this subject, Riddick Bowe, because I always, for whatever reason, you know, I love Evander Holyfield, and Bowe was never exactly, I like Lennox Lewis a lot, Bowe was never exactly one of my favorites, but to get to watch these fights again, I like him a lot more, and I enjoyed watching him progress to fight Evander Holyfield that night, and in particular that 10th round. That is a wonderful thing to see, and I underestimated Riddick Bowe in my own heart, and So it was a wonderful thing to go through his whole, you know, sort of progress and career. And I'm very sad as things happen badly for him. But one thing we do is we talk about that too. We don't claim it's an innocent, angelic sport. We admit it can be really rough. And Pritchard Colon, the Puerto Rican fighter, has been in a coma since October 2015. I wish him and his family well. That because we support boxing doesn't mean we support injuries. We want the guys to come out okay when all said and done.
All right, so Christopher, next week's topic, Tommy Morrison versus George Foreman.
Sounds great.
All right, guys, you can come back and catch us next Monday live at 1 o'clock on thegrillingtruth.net. We will have our interview up with former champion Tony the Tiger Lopez later this week. As we said, we will have former WBA heavyweight champion Mike Weaver on the show tonight on the Boxing Legends Show. That should come up around 9 o'clock Eastern on thegrillingtruth.net. Also, you can go check out all of Michael Montero's videos. He'll probably have a show up either tonight or tomorrow. Former referee Joe Cortez. Tomorrow night, you can look for his show on thegruelingtruth.net. He's going to start a show there. Chris Carlson does a boxing podcast. Also, we've got Inside Boxing Weekly with myself, Jeremiah Pricer, John Einreinhofer. And I am in talks to get Lamont Peterson on sometime here, either next Sunday or the Sunday after, to discuss his training for his big fight coming up against Errol Spence. Also, if you're an NFL football fan, check us out tomorrow night live on the NFL Pick'em Show at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on thegruelingtruth.net. So, for Christopher Shelton, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.